If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Welcome to a completely unnecessary podcast for Wednesday, December 10th, 2014, alongside Pac-Man and his little, nice little Christmas hat.
Santa Man
and Ian Ferguson. We're in a jolly mood. How are you doing, Ian?
Oh, we're jolly.
How are sales of the store?
They were actually really busy over the weekend. Today, not so much. Updates, personal life, the things, I don't know, I'm getting ready for the holidays, I'm trying to get all my shopping done, I'm trying to get some things together for something I have going on in January.
We booked MAGFest. I mean, they didn't book us, but we booked MAGFest.
Do we even have a panel?
We don't know if we have a panel yet for MAGFest.
We're not, fucking A.
That's not going to help our cause.
I'm just saying. I felt like we knew in like August last year, which is a lie. I'm just saying that's what it felt like. Other than that, Bonnie is going out of town this weekend to work another comic convention in Phoenix, which means that I'll be watching a lot of nature documentaries, the boring ones.
I've been watching all Star Trek Next Generation on Netflix. I really like that show a lot more now that I'm older.
Oh, yeah, me too. No, and so, I went back and watched some of it like 2 years ago. First, I liked it way better.
First season's not good. The second season starts to get going. By the third season, third season, there's some good episodes.
You should watch good the episodes. First season, but yeah, the first season
I
is,
looked at the... I basically judged it by the descriptions. That sounds kind of corny. The first season of Next Generation tried too much to be like the original series where the messages were so over-the-top and glaring, where there was like no moral ambiguity at all. It was just like, well, it's like having the half black, half white creatures fighting with the other creatures that have the opposite. You know, it was that beating you over the head versus making you think a little bit at least.
But it certainly got more nuanced, and everyone kind of filled out their roles, I'd say, by season three.
Yeah, the Borg come there and they're better, and then you have Warp actually get stuff to do by the third season instead of just standing there looking mean.
Yeah.
So I don't know why we're talking about this. We have an action-packed show tonight.
We got a lot to get to.
We're talking about the Game Awards, no longer the Video Game Awards. We're talking about the Zelda Wii U footage revealed, Street Fighter V exclusivity to PS4. Amiibos being discontinued. What's going on there? We're talking about the PewDiePie South Park episode that aired last week, as well as YouTube Rewind that came out. PS4 20th anniversary systems. Target Australia pulling GTA 5 from store shelves. Terminator Genesis trailer, maybe. Spectre Bond film announced, maybe. Sony Marvel Spider-Man talks falling apart, or are they? Deadpool, Star Wars, Force Awakens, Max Fury Road trailer, I can't talk, wrestling, CM Punk, and your Q&A. Let's get started.
There is no effing way we're getting through all of that.
On a more somber note, we'll start this with, Ralph Baer passed away over the weekend, and I'm very proud this time of the video game community of actually coming out in droves and lots of good articles praising the man's life and his accomplishments for helping to start, well, he invented the console game industry and really then video games in the U.S. for the most part. You can go back to MIT and the mainframe computer games of the 60s, but that would have never really done much unless someone like Ralph Baer put it in everyone's living room on TV. And Ralph Baer is not a guy that, when you talk about video game history, he doesn't come up a lot as much as he really should.
Right.
Talking about the Nolan Bush, now he's talking about the Miyamotos. You don't talk about Ralph Baer, unfortunately, a lot. He's a guy that had a very long and great life. He escaped Nazi Germany as part of it. He was Jewish. He was Jewish. He left three months before they really started clamping down on the Jews and sending them away to the camps, like literally 3 months before he got out. His family, thankfully, he served in the U.S. military, did a lot of good stuff for there. And then the 60s comes, and he just had a lot of cool ideas. I mean, not just for video games. He had the idea of ordering stuff through your telephone in the 60s, stuff like that.
Right.
Having like a modem hooked up to a TV, basically, before people were really even thinking about these things, besides the Magnavox Odyssey, which he contributed to via the Brown Box. So, yeah, he's a guy that, hell, he started a multi-billion dollar year industry and really didn't get much for it. For all that work. I know Bushnell basically stole the Pong idea from him and then helped start Atari from that. And I think he did get money out of that via Mandevox going after that through their patents. So he did get something off that. But he's not a guy that you really heard a lot about after, you know, the 70s. You know?
I think for a lot of people, especially early on in the internet, a lot of people looked at Bushnell as kind of the father of it. And information about Bayer and the appreciation of Bayer became more widespread as people wrote more articles on him in the 2000s and things like that. And he talked a bit more. He was 92 when he passed away. I mean, he led a full life. And as you have already said, you know, pretty damn decent one, and one that was, you know, helped by his intelligence and by his, you know, the luck and the ability to get out of Nazi Germany.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the, I don't want to sound maybe cold, but I think one of the interesting things about Ralph Baer and him passing away is, when you look at popular media, I guess I would call it, you know, popular pastimes, you know, video games, books, movies, mm-hmm. music, those sorts of things. You know, none of us alive really remember, the passing of the person who invented movies, you know, or
yeah,
the person
Graham Bell.
Who invented the printing press, or the sure. person who, recorded music. And here we have, you know, kind of a very quiet, unassuming guy, and he's passed away, and you know, when you really think about, you know, it's interesting because the time span's been so short, really, for yeah. video. It makes you realize how short video games have actually been an actual form of entertainment, that
yeah.
we are actually alive to see the passing of basically the founder of the home video game console market.
Yeah, it's less than 50 years. And this, unless something else that comes out we're not aware of, this is the last entertainment medium that's been created.
Right.
This is it. This could be it. We don't know. There could be some sort of like neuro thing that happens where we can visualize it in our head. You know what I mean? Some sort of interactive thing like that. But this is it for now, at least,
but,
for the foreseeable future.
You know, I was actually thinking about that today. You know, you think about virtual reality or something like that. But if you're still using it to play games, I mean, is he still the father of games? Or is there,
well,
do you have to make a cutoff at some point?
Well, a video game. That wouldn't be video games, in your
right,
head.
Sure,
that'd be like
sure.
mental. You know what I mean? That'd be. It might be based on the same sort of creative process of video games, but it wouldn't be video games anymore.
That's fair.
I mean, but it's interesting. He's not a guy that, until I was very happy to see all the articles on every major gaming site do something at least on him. So he's not been forgotten. And he's a guy, again, that he wasn't a billionaire. He was living in New Hampshire, probably fairly modest means by his own volition. And I'm not sure if Mandevox still gets royalties from every single video game that console has come out since the 70s due to the patent, since mm-hmm. they originally patented the idea of interactive video games to a TV.
Right.
I don't know if Nintendo and Sony has to pay out a percentage, even if it's like $5,000 per whatever, 10 years. Even something, so I'm not sure if that's still going on, but, you know, he lived a great full life. I'm glad to see him honored. And yeah, what else can you say? He served his country. He helped. There's a reason we're doing the podcast, you know, partially. You have a video games, you work in a video game store partially because they're out there.
Right.
I mean,
yeah, I mean, my entire job owes itself to
and
him.
He seemed like a cool guy. Like, he honestly did. Like,
he seemed very laid back.
If you go on YouTube, you can see, like, the sort of, like, half-hour demonstration of all the technology was coming mm-hmm. up in his head, besides the brown box, which he had and was demonstrating, but besides having, like, a modem hooked up to, like, a TV to order stuff, which is insane to think about in the 60s, that he wanted to at least
yeah.
thought about doing that. He just seemed like a cool, laid-back, kind of a jokey guy that, you know, he probably never envisioned. I think he even said that, I just sort of kick-started this thing. And it went in the direction I never thought it would go. And that's how it all starts. And he wasn't like someone like Thomas Edison, who was cutthroat
right.
and wanted to kill the competition. You know, he wasn't like that, where that's why you remember Edison, because he was ruthless. This
right.
was a guy that wanted everyone to, you know, to have a chance to do what he created, not keep them out. You know, and that's very important to get a sort of a burgeoning industry going, to get as many people as possible into it and not, you know, not drive them out, not to control like Edison tried to do with electricity, you know, AC versus DC, things like that.
He always looked happy, too. I don't know. I noticed that today when just looking at some articles of him. Like, and that's the nice thing. Like you said, you know, all the websites said something. It was nice to, after months and months of drama, to see kind of everyone on the same page with something. But, you know, the pictures that they used for, I mean, I'm sure they were nice shots, but he always just seemed to have like a half smile on. You know, he always seemed happy.
And there's something they said. They do studies that usually the happier you are, the longer you live. So there you go. Ralph Baer, hope you're... Table tennising up. I was going to say ponging up. Wasn't pong. Table tennising up somewhere.
Right.
So the Game Awards happened. They used to be the VGAs. They used to be on Spike TV. Jeff Keighley produces and hosts it. And very mixed feelings about the award show overall. I'll just start by my major problems with it is that, you know, the board of directors of the show are all the major video game companies, first and foremost. You know, so... You know that going into watching the Game Awards, and now it's only on the internet, it's not on any network anymore, I'd say 75% is advertisers for upcoming games. You have to know that going into watching the show. Obviously, that's where the money comes from to make this, but you have to know that they get together in a room, Sony, Microsoft, Ubisoft, Nintendo, they all contribute to this project. They are on, you watch the credits, they are part of this, and hell, they help introduce it. I mean, it was introduced by Reggie Fils-Aimé, introduced the Video Game Awards. So it's like, this is totally being run by the people that have an interest in it, which again, you don't want to see that, but it's almost like you have to, it's not like it's gotten to the point where movies where at least they have a disconnect on the Oscars. Here, it's not at all. Obviously, it's not.
Right. I don't think video games are necessarily big enough yet for an award show like that. It's why I don't watch it, though. It feels like a dog and pony show. It doesn't feel reputable. None of it seems like it's for real. It all seems kind of fake. All the winners are pretty much predictable and mailed in. But every once in a while on these shows, you get something that's pretty interesting. And I looked it up as soon as I heard about it. Ken and Roberta Williams were honored on it, which is a pretty damn big deal, just because they are not modern and they are not...
they have been involved in video games like 15 years.
Right. So it's they're not necessarily names that would resonate with a large portion of the modern gaming audience, yet the Game Awards felt the need to bring them on.
Ken and Roberta Williams were the founders of Sierra. Ken Williams basically ran the company. Roberta Williams obviously worked on a lot of games. Obviously, her huge claim to fame is the King's Quest series. She was she's the the grandmother or mother of video games because of that. She's the first big name that established a franchise. I think she was also involved in Gabriel Knight to some extent, but I don't think she was the main. She wasn't the main author of that.
I don't know. I'm pretty sure that was someone completely else.
Then there was a few other game series she was involved with, but obviously the big one is King's Quest. So, but this is what I'm going to get into, though, is that they were honored for a few minutes. They came out and spoke.
They did a nice presentation on them.
It was nice. The guy who introduced them was very heartfelt. You can tell. It got the amount of applause I expected. There was some polite applause. Some people, I'd say 10% of the people were really thrilled, and then the other 90%, who the hell, they don't like, who are these old people? We don't know who they are.
Right.
But then, of course, Activision is revealed that there's a new King's Quest game coming out. I'm not even going to talk about the quality of the game. I will ask this question, though. Do you think there's any chance in hell they would have honored Ken and Roberta Williams if it wasn't for Activision coming out with a new King's Quest game?
No, but that doesn't make it any less nice to see them getting recognition. But no, they would not have just pulled them up for no goddamn reason.
But if they were only used as the preface and introduction to the trailer, which is what they were, basically they spoke for a few minutes, and they did get a chance to speak, and they looked great. Roberta Williams looks fantastic.
She hasn't aged a freaking day.
She's got to be closing on 60. She looks fantastic.
Ken honestly doesn't look that much different than he did either.
I mean, obviously they started the Sierra like probably the early 20s back in like 70, right. It was like 78 about.
Study diet of baby blood. I had to keep them looking young.
Of the Sierras?
I have no idea.
But I mean, that's what bothered me the most. The game looks fine. I think it's supposed to be, you're King Arthur, again, or at least Arthur in the new game. It looks like it's a 3D platformer with some puzzle involved in the trailer. So it looks like they're trying to get some elements in there from the games, but obviously they're going to have to update it to have some sort of interactive adventuring besides puzzle games.
What I liked was when you look at the trailer, and we can only go based on the trailer, there was almost no combat highlighted. As a matter of fact, I don't remember seeing any combat.
Well, he had a bow and arrow.
Oh, he had a bow and arrow. but who's to say that's not part of a puzzle? I mean, that's the only thing they showed. And then, you know, what I think the game is going to end up being is I think it'll probably end up being similar to the Telltale series of games. There's that segment where he's going down the river on the slab and he's jumping a few mm-hmm. things. So I'm going to assume that it's going to be a lot of puzzle solving like we saw in the traditional games. But then I'm sure there's going to be some quick time elements that lead sure. to deaths and things like that that you have to redo.
That was my only problem with it. It's great that they presented it to them, but they should have presented to them after the reveal, I believe, because then, like, the last half, they were just awkwardly off to the side while the new developer comes on and talks for, like, 3 minutes, and it's like, that's kind of a slap in their faces.
It probably should have been revealed first.
Yes, they should have revealed, this is King's Quest, because what's the difference if the audience didn't know what King's Quest was anyway? They weren't going to automatically start caring because of a 3 minute vignette.
Sure.
Let's be honest, they're not going to give a shit either way if they didn't play those games. Also, they're not going to go, oh, there's a point and click adventure game I never played or care about the genre. I'm going to care about the remake. No. They should have showed the original, then brought them out as a surprise. I would have marked out probably even more if that was the case, if it was like that, versus let's just get these people down here to help promote our game next year. Mm-hmm. That just rubbed me really the wrong way, and that goes to show you why these game awards, there's so much just unless they separate from the industry itself, you can't have an award show unless you separate from the industry you're trying to, you know, give out awards to. It doesn't make any sense to me.
I agree. I mean, my nostalgia for the adventure game era, I mean, I played tons of them in the 80s and the 90s, and honestly, I was really split between Sierra and LucasArts.
Like most people were. Yeah. Those were the two big dominant companies.
My warmth for them, you know, I kind of let that take me away from the fact that, like you said, it was kind of insulting. But overall, I can't watch those things. I wait until after the fact. I didn't know about Ken and Roberta until after the fact.
Me too.
Which is probably why it bothered me less at the time as well, because the first time I watched it separate from the trailer mm-hmm. without any idea of the ordering. They're just painful to watch. And everyone, I think it's funny, and people are going to, you know, it's even people on my Twitter feed, so I'm not just taking fucking stabs at no one. Everyone talks about how much they suck and how they're not going to watch them, and then every year during the Video Game Awards, my fucking Twitter feed is blown up with people commenting on
because
this shit.
That's it. That's the only awards they have. And it's like,
right.
it's presented like the Oscars, so you think it has some significance when it really doesn't, when it's really...
But if they're dog shit, why would you watch? Just because it's the only thing. I mean, what's the point?
Yeah, it's not like... I don't want. We can go off to this for hours about how this is structured, and obviously it's the industry money that makes it go. And we already said they're basically on the board constructed. They would not. Nintendo would not have said we're going to give you money to probably help do this unless we can promote all our games. You know, and basically every company had their own speaker come out. You know, the Sony president comes out. You know, and talks about their. You know what I mean? It's just, you know what's going to happen.
Sure.
But we did see something at least cool that we could talk about. They revealed, it was like a 5 or 6 minute video. It's a pretty long video. Miyamoto with some other guy, I don't know his name, that's helping develop the new Zelda Wii U game, and showing some of the open world footage, which did look cool.
What I liked about it, a couple of key points that I liked about it. The world is not very, it didn't look very flat. Yeah, even in games like Skyrim, sometimes I have trouble, you know, finding the mountains to climb and things like that. They're there, don't get me wrong.
Sure.
But there seemed to be a focus on tall places to climb so you could get these gorgeous vistas of you know, Hyrule, you know, as you're playing around. What also interested me, truly from a gameplay perspective, that actually made me go, wow, that's really awesome, was, sounds so stupid, but it's how the horse mechanics work with Epona. I don't know if you paid attention to that prior, if you saw it, but basically, you don't have to steer a ton when you're riding on the horse. You kind of set a point, and you maneuver the horse in, you know, in certain directions, but you don't have to constantly be steering. And
the horse
just
goes.
And as the guy said, he's like, well, because real horses don't often crash into trees. So if you're aiming a Epona through a forest, you can then control Link and use your bow and arrow to shoot things, and the horse is going to weave in and out of trees naturally. And that's not... That, to me, is great, because that's not hand-holding in a video game. That's actual realism in a game that makes sense.
Yeah, it's not hand-holding. It's also not something that's going to be boring you to tears trying to avoid every little tree that comes up.
Right.
Otherwise, it'd be a chore to want to explore the world and go place to place. I will say this, though. Until they really describe what's going to be involved in this open world, I'm not really going to buy it as something that's going to sell me on the game until You know that there's going to be like random events and quests that you can go on, you know, whether you can explore and find stuff. If it's just literally just going to be a bigger version of the 3D like N64 games where you have to travel constantly back and forth, I don't care. You have to give me some sort of unique sort of experience that I have not seen in a previous 3D Zelda game or otherwise. Yeah, it's just fancier, really fancy window dressing, but window dressing nonetheless. So yeah, I want to be able to really feel like I can go at my own pace and not just, okay, we're going to give you this huge open world, but now you go from point A to B, back to point A, back to C, to D. And then it's like, well, okay. Now, you know you're going to have to do that anyway to some extent.
Yes.
But some randomness would be nice. And some, you know what I mean? To even side quests that are somewhat randomized or something. I'm thinking more like an open world game, I guess like a Red Dead Redemption or, you know.
I think they're going to do this. And the reason I think so is one, in the video, and it's hard to tell, but, you know, you're going from phrasing through translator, but they're looking at little artifacts, and they're setting waypoints, and they're like, oh, now here's something over here that looks odd. Maybe we can go check that out and see what's going on around there, or, oh, is this the entrance to, like, an old dungeon or something like that? They make it sound like these are things that you would explore like you would in an Elder Scrolls game and naturally find something around it. My other reason is I think they're going to go at least slightly towards something like that is Dragon Quest IX did incredibly well. Now, I know Square Enix made Dragon Quest IX, but Nintendo published it. And one of the interesting things about Dragon Quest IX was that it was a traditional Japanese RPG with a set storyline, but there were random caves and things that you could find.
Okay.
You could find treasure maps, and these things kind of appeared randomly to give you questing you could go off and do on your own. You could wander and find something random, and it was such a huge success for them that I think they might have taken something from it. So I do think we're going to see some, I mean, even in Skyrim, it's not, or like I said, Oblivion, one of those two, it's not a random thing, it's built in. But yes, I do think we're going to see places that we can explore in the new Zelda that aren't going to have anything to do with the main storyline. Other than to give you treasure, loot, I don't know if there's going to be an experience system, but they're going to give you some sort of respite from your basic quest.
I would hope, because that would get me interested in it.
Yeah, it would get me interested in it too, because I'm otherwise not, as I've said before, I don't hate Zelda games, but they've just never been my thing. This would make me way more interested in a Zelda game. Speaking of interesting, like, my segues are great. Street Fighter V was announced, and it's a pretty big bombshell. It's exclusive to PS4 on the console. It's also going to be on the PC.
Street Fighter V?
Yeah, sorry. And the reason it's going to be this way is when this news dropped, everyone just assumed it was a timed exclusive. You know, Xbox One fans are like, well, we'll wait and see. But it came out that Sony has actually put a good deal of money into the development of Street Fighter V. And that's what's gained it its exclusivity. And this, to me, begs the question. A lot of people seem to think, well, okay, they just meant Street Fighter V, but Super, Turbo, etc. could not be. If Sony is putting money into the groundwork, that leads me to believe that potentially this entire game is going to be, this, you know, five and all of its upgrades are going to be PS4 only.
Well, according to this article, also PC.
PC, right. And what I think is interesting about this in the fighting game community, and I think the impact this might have is, if someone came out and said that Street Fighter V was going to be on all platforms, but say something like King of Fighters was going to be a PS4 exclusive, okay, that might matter to someone like me who really likes King of Fighters, mm-hmm. right? But it seems like everyone in the fighting game community, and I'm not, someone's going to get all fucking mouthy about this, I'm not speaking for the fighting game community, but I feel like that's the central game, right? That's the one that everyone goes back to. Some people might like Marvel vs. Capcom 3 more. Some people might like King of Fighters more. Some people might like Guilty Gear more. But everyone goes back to Street Fighter. I feel like the fact that Street Fighter V is only on the PlayStation 4 is because of that a very big deal. I think that's going to move units to people who play fighting games.
This is a huge deal. This is a big blow to Microsoft, honestly. Yeah. It's a huge blow.
And it's like I said, it's because this is the game everyone goes back to.
This either means to me that this can mean a couple of things. For one, it means that Capcom is in some sort of trouble. that they need this money.
Well, yes.
We talked about that before, about the chance of them going bankrupt and their shareholders being really pissed. We talked about that like 6-7 months ago.
Yeah.
The fact that a huge heralded franchise that goes back literally 25 years now needs money to put out their next game, that is so strange.
Yep.
So strange. This isn't a small company. This is Capcom, one of the major AAA, you know, sort of publishers. That this is a head scratcher. When you told me this at first, I was like, that doesn't make any sense. It doesn't.
But it does. It does from a financial standpoint. And I mean, when you look at other stuff that's coming up on their horizons, like Resident Evil Revelations 2, and like the Resident Evil remake. You know, I mean, that's a remake of a remake. Revelations 2 is probably going to reuse a lot of assets. I mean, you know, everything else they're doing is... I mean, they don't have a lot of money or production power right now.
Is this a play to get Sony to invest in them maybe more? And maybe, I'm not talking about business stuff, but maybe be almost like a, you know, sort of a minor stake shareholder, and maybe eventually they want to turn all Capcom PS PlayStation exclusive? Is this maybe a first play at that? It could be an interesting go. I don't know.
I felt that was potentially the case, but you have to, I mean, we've talked about this before. Sony doesn't have a lot of money either. I don't know that Sony is necessarily going to be Capcom's sugar daddy. I just think that they saw an opportunity to get a very big game exclusive to their system. They were like, we will buy this money. Yeah, we will buy this game from you with this money.
Mm-hmm.
Someone actually, you know, ties in a little bit to QA. They're like, you know, what do you think about the Street Fighter V exclusivity? And why is it suddenly okay for a company to buy out, you know, to buy exclusivity? I don't think it's okay to buy exclusivity, but if the game's not going to get made unless someone throws money at them, then really, who throws money at them is going to get the game. I mean, that just makes sense to me.
But, I mean, let's be honest here, though. They put out, what, a new Street Fighter 4 game in the past 4 or 5 years? Ultra, Super Edition. Well, I mean, they put out at least 3 or 4 different ones, right?
Yeah.
So, it's not that hard for them to put in those minor upgrades. It's not costing Capcom much or anything. Plus, when you put in all the DLC that they're charging for freaking palette swaps for whatever, $2.99, they're making some money off this franchise. Do you believe Street Fighter V has a brand new engine
yes.
from scratch?
I do.
Okay.
I don't think... I mean, every numbered Street Fighter has.
So, if that's the case, and if you think they're that hard up for money, then... This could be the beginning of the end, then, for Capcom being a cross-platform company.
Yeah. I also would quickly say that I don't think it's necessarily okay for a company to buy the exclusivity. I don't really think that's what's going on here. But in the case of the PS4 and the Xbox One, it goes back to fanboys and console wars. Xbox One is currently viewed as the bad guy. I don't think anyone's sad, you know, to see, you know, some sort of, you know, something befall the Xbox One. I think it's better for both platforms to have the games. I think it's better for, you know, people to have the choice. But in terms of why are people cheering for it?
I wouldn't cheer this at all. I mean, you always want games to be available on as many platforms as possible.
Yes. The other thing is that people have said is the reason why it didn't go to Microsoft is... it's pretty important to note that the Street Fighter V is going to be cross-play between PS4 and PC.
I'll believe it when I see that.
No, they've already announced it as official.
But you've had announcements like this in the past where cross-platform never happened, so I want to see this.
I don't know that we have. But the fact that Microsoft has always been very, very, for whatever reason, anti-crossplay, it seems, between their consoles and PCs. If Microsoft, maybe Capcom went to Microsoft. I mean, they did get Dead Rising 3 exclusively. If Microsoft balked at that idea, I mean, Capcom wants a global platform. I mean, Capcom wants the most global platform to play the game on.
Why would they push that if Sony put in all this money for people to play it on PS4, why would they push for that to be cross-platform? That would only hurt their sales in some capacity. Is it because they realize that most people don't play fighting games on computer? Is that why?
I think so, but I also think because the extra sales for the bigger fan base, it's not a directly competing fan base like it is with the Xbox One.
Unless they're getting a small percentage of it, sales no matter what, because they're putting money into investing.
Which they probably are, and I think it's better. They would rather go to any number of, you know... Like I said, the PC is not a direct competitor of the PS4, I guess is all I'm trying to say there.
Like I said, again, I've seen console, PC, cross-platform promise before.
On what games? I don't. I mean, I've heard everyone ask for it, but I've never seen it promised.
Well, I've seen it announced. I'm going back to like the, even the PS2. They were thinking about doing it on stuff. I don't off the top of my head. I don't know, but first person shooters, they always try to say, yeah, we can do that, and they never do it. It's always too complicated. But we'll see. Maybe they finally figured out. I guess if it's the same exact coding, you know, they can do that and, well, and work the servers together.
We've also got a system that is internally much more a PC than ever before. So.
Ever since the Xbox, they're turning into computers. So
anyway, I mean, but yeah, I think that's definitely a big thing for Sony. Big loss for Microsoft. So the Amiibos came out. And if you don't know what an Amiibo is, if you haven't somehow seen what an Amiibo is or gotten read one of the articles, Nintendo is now in what they, I believe they call NFC, near Wi-Fi connection or something like that, market for toys. It's the same thing that is used in the Skylanders toys and in the Disney Infinity toys. And
near field communication, what NFC stands for.
Near field communication. And what these are, they are a series of toys based on Nintendo property characters. They're doing, I believe, 49 of them in 3 or 4 waves. All of the Smash Brothers characters will be represented. The characters themselves, I like the figures. What they do with the game is fairly minimal, but fun. You can tap them on your controller, and you can train them up to level 50. Once they're at level 50, you can keep feeding them certain items and armors to increase their stats. And basically, you can create these really, really difficult computer opponents to fight against. For instance, my buddy and I had a very tough time defeating my level 50 Kirby the other night when we were playing 2 against 1. But as with anything like these figurines, some are more popular, some are less popular. And there's always questions about scarcity and are they ever going to become collectible.
Sure. And in any, this is a toy. This is a figure. It's a figure.
Right.
At least. And in any batches of figures that are made, they're never made in the same quantity per, you know, per run. Usually in a case of figures, usually a few that get less produced.
So there was a scare the other day because a supplier basically, all of this started on rumor and speculation. A supplier said that the 3 scarcest, Marth, Villager from Animal Crossing, and Wii Fit Trainer were being discontinued. That was based on interactions between this supplier and Nintendo, but there was nothing to back it up. What followed was a letter from a well-known Nintendo representative that said that, no, they had not discontinued anything. As, you know, some are going to be more popular than others. It's the holiday season. You know, they were going to try to get things back in stock as soon as they could. Mm-hmm. But then Nintendo came out and left us with this piece of information, which unfortunately, to me, doesn't sound very positive. I think Pat has a different take on this.
This is from Games Radar?
No, this is the Nintendo Life one.
Okay.
And the direct quote is, We will aim for certain amiibo to always be available. These will be for our most popular characters like Mario and Link. Due to shelf space constraints, other figures likely will not return to the market once they have sold through their initial shipment. That, to me, sounds an awful lot like Wii Fit Trainer, Villager, and Marth aren't coming back.
Well, and what date was this posted, this article? Is that from the 8th?
Well, that was from the 8th, but that's a direct line from Nintendo.
Okay, this is a Games Radar reporting this from today. This says the official word from Nintendo of America. Again, this is Games Radar reporting this. Some amiibo were very popular at launch, and it is possible that some amiibo in the United States, Canada, and Latin America may not be available right now due to high demand. In our efforts to manage shelf space during the launch period, certain sold-out amiibo may return to these markets at a later stage. We are continually aiming to always have a regular supply of amiibo in the marketplace, and there are many waves of amiibo to come. So they're not saying it's discontinued. What they're saying is, yeah, we can cut up the supply right now because we have more to come out, but who knows? We can always put them back on the shelf.
I still think that just sounds like a nicer phrasing of what I already said. And really what it comes down to is you just have to think retail and shelf space. They have 49 of these things coming out.
Overall. Now, sure.
Overall. And you know, Toys R Us's, I mean, section for Amiibo just for the first wave was huge. I mean, there isn't going to be any way that they can possibly keep all of these in production.
Okay. I'm going to have to go upon my, not my vast knowledge, but decent knowledge of toy production. Going back to even, let's just say, G.I. Joe's. When G.I. Joe put out a line of new figures, every year there were roughly 20 to 25 new figures every year that they were put out. The previous year's figures were always produced, I believe, for 2 years. So the figures that came out in 82, you could get up to, I think, 84. Then they'd be discontinued. So I'm not sure exactly how it works. I wasn't alive then. But, of course, you'd have most of the newest ones would be available with the newest line. Then, but of course, there'd probably be, I guess, a smaller batch of the previous figures still available. They'd reproduce because people would still want those. So that's just smart business. You see the newer figures, you see the newer older ones, and maybe you want a couple of the older ones. If Nintendo were complete idiots, yes, they would stop making Villager and the other two that are hard to find. But why wouldn't they continue to put out a very small quantity, at least giving people the hopes that they can get them, and not having to spend tons of money, you know, on the aftermarket ones?
Because because it's still shelf space. It doesn't matter if you include two in a shipment; you still need a spot for them to go. But, I mean, the only real answer to this is an online store, a Nintendo online store, where you can order these directly.
Well, that's an answer, and again, that's why to me, I think I think these discontinued rumors are played up by whatever these websites are getting. First of all, a lot of these websites got this information early and just ran with it, not really realizing what this means. Because to discontinue means, to me, discontinue means it's done forever. That's it, with no chance of coming back, which I think is not going to happen here. And that only fuels all the eBay listings you see where it says discontinued rare villager. Give me $200 for it. And no one wins except that, you know, reseller that is going out to all the Targets and all the GameStops and buying as many as it can. And it fuels it, and it's just bad. So I'm not going to blame Nintendo here. Again, there's shelf space issues. And yeah, most people are going to go out to the store. I went out to the Target. There was one link left. There was probably a decent amount of links, I guess. And there was a lot of Marios left. They're probably the most well-produced ones. He's the franchise sort of icon. You had you had like one or two or three or four Yoshis, a few Donkey Kongs. I can picture them making a lot of Donkey Kongs. He's not a hugely popular pet character anymore, you know. And so yeah, they have to manage shelf space, but that doesn't mean they can't have limited numbers. Whenever the original Ninja Turtles toys came out, April O'Neil was hard to find because who would want an April? What little boy want to play with April O'Neil figure? That's probably what they thought, you know, Playmates. And so it was so hard to find. There was only one or two per, you know, ship into a store. But they reproduced them later, and they came out with a version 2. The original run of Power of the Force Star Wars figures, and they re-released them, what was it, 95. Princess Leia was hard to find, and so she went for more money. But you know what? A year later, you could find her. They released another version of her. She was out there, so you could get it. So I don't think that this means the end of these characters. I just don't. I just think that, you know, what? So they can put one or two. If Nintendo's producing these, it's not going to cost them any more to run up that machine and produce these little pieces of plastic that don't cost them much to produce.
I don't know. Wii Fit, Villager, Marth. I like Wii Fit. I actually have the Wii Fit trainer. I want a Villager. I don't care about the Marth. But I'm sorry. Wave 2 is due out, I believe, in a couple of weeks. And I'm sorry. I'm just looking at this line from Nintendo. Other figures will likely not return to the market once they've sold through their initial shipment, which to me would be their Wave 1 shipment. I don't see these coming back.
You think they're not going to make any more after all the waves are out? You think once they sell, they're just going to let that space not be sold? They think there's demand?
I think there's going to be...
You think Nintendo's stupid?
I think that shelf space-wise, there's going to be, out of 49 characters, I think there's going to be a big enough best-of list that, yes, a lot of these are never going to come back.
So you think Nintendo will be that short-sighted not to know that people are chasing after these?
Because Nintendo's never been short-sighted before?
Not saying that, but they're going to see these printing money, and they probably are printing money. They charge, what are these, $12 each?
Anywhere from $12.99 to
$13.99. It probably costs them $1.50 each to produce these things in bulk.
I mean, I would love for what you're saying to be true, but I guess in this instance, no, I don't have the faith in Nintendo to do that, and okay. I don't see them coming back.
We'll have to make a gentleman's bet that after all these waves are released over the next 6 months, that they're going to produce more of these. And then there's nothing to stop them from easily throwing in a couple of the lesser desirable ones per case. Okay, we'll throw in a couple of villagers here just to mix it up. It's not going to cost them shelf space to put two or three. Say after all these 49 comes out, say there's like 10 to 12 that are tough to find. Fair enough, something like that. Say three or four per wave. After that, what's it keep them saying? Okay, we'll throw a few of these in per box of, I don't know, I'm trying to think of what toy shipments back in the day, what they came in. I think there were cartons, starting lineup figures. What was there, 12 to 20 of them, something like that, you know?
I think this is all going to depend on how popular the functionality of the Amiibo is later on, and how popular, if the popularity of it wanes down or not. I do think that, yes, there are some that we're not going to see. And I do think that if there is one that you want and you see it for a reasonable price, you should probably grab it. And by a reasonable price, I mean retail to a little bit more. I'm not saying spend 30 to like 60.
Or like you said, if Nintendo puts them for sale on their store, I don't see why they wouldn't do that. It's printing money.
To me, that's the easy solution to this.
Yeah. It doesn't cost them anything to do it. If they do a run of, like, say they do a run of, I don't know, per these tough characters, they do a run of, I don't know, 300 each or something, just to test the waters. Right. They know they can probably move those overall. It's not going to cost them that much to make that. And then they see them all sell out in a couple of days. What do you think they're going to do? Not make more? They're going to make more. They're going to figure it out at some point. I have faith that we said this back when they first announced this. This is how Nintendo is going to make their money back in a large chunk. Because the Wii U, they're not making that much money on each console. I'm not sure if they are. I think they're about breaking even per console sold. This is their peripheral that's going to make them a bank,
right?
If it's successful. And this is only the first game that they're doing this with.
Well, no. It unlocks costumes for Mario Kart. It will.
Well, I mean, like, this is the first line for this, for Smash.
Sure.
After this, maybe there'll be one for the Zelda Wii U game. Maybe there'll be, you know what I mean? They can start thinking about other, you know what I mean?
They unlock weapons for Hyrule Warriors, too.
What I'm saying is, though, this is not going to be the last line that come out just for, you know, based upon Smash. There could be more later.
But Smash is a great starting point because
there's so many characters.
Because there's so many characters to start with.
So, it was interesting. South Park, which, by the way, has been having an excellent season, because this is the first time they've actually had continuity episode to episode for the most part. And it's actually worked out very, very, very humorously, especially with Randy's character being the Lord the Singer. How do you say it? Lord? It's just Lord.
I haven't watched any of this season, including this episode. But, I mean, I do like Randy as a character.
So, basically, the running gag season, he's been the Singer Lord. It's been him. And so, they've used it to good effect in many episodes. And they've even been referencing past little things, like Butters got suspended in one episode. They actually referenced it the next episode. They've never really done that before in South Park. They've usually been very self-contained, not really going back. And now they've been doing it. And it's actually worked out. This is the advantage of them having usually split 7 episodes every 6 months. This is 10 once a year they've been doing the past year.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they have a better chance to plan these out. And it's been better results because of that. So PewDiePie, the number one YouTuber, like 30 million subscribers, does quote-unquote humorous Let's Plays. He appeared in the last South Park episode, and it was basically a commentary on how... It wasn't an attack. It was almost like neutral. Matt and Trey didn't really attack the phenomenon of Let's Plays. They were more neutral on understanding that younger generation, and to younger in South Park, are like the kindergarten first graders versus Stan and Kyle and Cartman and Kenny, who are fourth graders. So that's their differentiation there.
Because I did hear that Ike, like, one of the main things was Ike was, I believe, Ike focal was, this episode, and he, for whatever reason, enjoyed watching people play games more so than he did actually playing the game.
That was one of the messages, how Stan and Kyle couldn't believe that. why would you not want to play a video game versus watching others play video game?
That's my problem with them.
So they touched on, it was almost like Stan and Kyle were looked at from the kindergarten first graders as old men. They were like talked down to, like, you are almost like the elderly, not understanding this is how we get entertainment. So it was interesting because, again, they weren't attacking PewDiePie. It was South Park saying that we understand there's this generational thing going on. This is a new entertainment sort of medium for these younger people. We may think it's dumb, but they think it's cool. And that's where they basically left it, which is fair enough. Because if we don't understand the appeal of it, it's a huge phenomenon maybe to younger people, and it makes it sound old, but that's really what it comes down to.
Right.
Which there's not much more to say about it besides in the episode Cartman was trying to be his own PewDiePie character, and actually right now is the episode part two, which is the season finale. So if you watch this on YouTube, we're recording this on Wednesday, December 10th. So that's why it's new to you, but it's old to everyone else. So it'd be interesting to see what direction they take that with Cartman being put in a position of power and getting popular on YouTube. But to him, he's actually commenting on watching, basically going around with like almost like a GoPro just or on his phone recording people talking about how dumb PewDiePie and Let's Plays is, and is Cartman commenting on that commentating. So it's almost like a meta thing. So it's cool, it's cute, but this leads me into the YouTube Rewind, which I think it's only been going on the past couple of years, where it's a heavily well-produced and funded YouTube venture, which is Google, to sort of throw all their bigger channels into the mix into like a 3-4 minute video and sort of work the memes of the year into like a funny sort of quick way, almost like a music video,
mm-hmm.
working in all the bigger channels. My pal Kevin Lieber, who runs Vsauce 2, he appears in it for a couple seconds. PewDiePie's in there. And honestly, I didn't recognize 95% of them, but they're all huge YouTubers. I think Smosh was in there, the Fine Brothers, who we discussed. Which leads me into this sort of point about this YouTube Rewind, how there is already a generational gap between, quote-unquote, the big YouTube stars and everyone else, because it jumps from... You know, these big YouTube stars are mostly, let's say their average age is early 20s, maybe mid-20s.
Sure.
It jumps from them to Stephen Colbert and Conan O'Brien. And these are not YouTube stars. They're on YouTube, but they just use YouTube to get their medium out. So you have a gap between these huge guys. These are huge TV stars with talk shows in their late 40s going into 50s and early 20s. And there's like this weird sort of like in between part where, like, if you look at YouTube, at least the big stars, there's no one like late 20s going to 30s into 40s into 50s and on. It's not, doesn't exist there. Now, of course, YouTube is only as a sort of practical new media venue, I want to say 4 to 5 years old in terms of it being established as, you know, superstardom, maybe even only three and a half years.
Sure.
It's just an interesting, I'm not sure where I'm going with this, but it's very interesting to see that's how it's playing out.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's like, we're old for YouTube to be YouTube stars. You know, we're too old for it. Just an acknowledgement. That's just how it's looking at this point.
Can I introduce the next topic? Because it bothers me.
Okay.
All right. Actually, I'm skipping a topic, but I'm just jumping to this one because, god damn it. So, Target Australia pulls GTA 5s from store shelves, and Kmart down there follows. And the reason it got pulled from store shelves is because of a petition that...
Online petition?
An online petition over its depiction of violence against women. And that's... I don't like violence against women at all. I hate it. I self-identify as a feminist, which, with a lot of the listeners, gets me tons and tons of shit. And I'll always self-identify as that. My problem with this is, since when has Grand Theft Auto ever been a game about just beating women? Grand Theft Auto has always been a game about... It's an equal opportunity game of destruction. It's not just... Yes, you can focus on the fact that you can light a prostitute on fire. You can also focus on the fact that you can kill an old person in a hospital. Or, I mean, you can run over pedestrians.
You can murder policemen.
It's a policeman murderer. It's granny side. It's whatever the hell you want it to be. So I just find it. This is stuff that really bothers me because it pulls away from actual important topics about depictions of women in video games. When you go out and you target something like Grand Theft Auto 5, which is... And now, granted, I haven't played Grand Theft Auto 5. Maybe it's stacked more to one side or the other, but if it's Grand Theft Auto in any way that I know Grand Theft Auto, you can kill, beat up, and fuck over whoever you want in this game. And all you're... Like I said, all you're doing, in my opinion, is hurting... better, you're taking the fight out of better fights. by focusing your attention on something like Grand Theft Auto V.
Sure. We can go into a lot of different directions of this. I will just read some of the... So this is what the petition said, part of it. So, GTA 5 is a game that encourages players to murder women for entertainment. The incentive is to commit sexual violence against women, then abuse or kill them to proceed or get health points. And now Target are stocking it and promoting it for your Christmas stocking. The petition from Nicole, Claire, and Kat begins. The misogynistic GTA 5 literally makes a game of bashing, killing, and horrific violence against women. We have first-hand experience of this kind of sexual violence. It haunts us. We've been trying to rebuild our lives ever since. Just knowing that women are being portrayed as deserving to be sexually used by men, potentially murdered for sport and pleasure. To see this violence that we lived through turned into a form of entertainment is sickening, causes great pain and harm, it adds. As a result, Target has pulled the game. The company's corporate affairs manager has added, however, that it will continue to sell other R18+ rated games and films. And they said, Target, those fucking weasels, while other R18+ rated products often contain imagery that some customers find offensive, in the vast majority of cases, we believe they are appropriate products for us to sell to adult customers. However, in the case of GTA 5, we've listened to the strong feedback from customers that it is not a product they want us to sell. I can go into many directions with this. Let's start with this. And I wanted to tweet this out, is that if Target, of course, first of all, let's say this is not censorship. A store has the right to sell whatever they want. But I will call them fucking weasels, because if they had any integrity at all, they would have gone back then and pulled all the movies and books and CDs that have imagery or lyrics or words that depict sexual violence or violence towards women. If you're going to do it for one video game, do it for the rest of your video games, do it for your books, do it to your music CDs, do it to everything then. And I wouldn't have a problem with it as much. You want to make a stance I think is incorrect? You can do that, but then actually follow through with your intent. Don't just make a change over one individual game because of an online petition. That to me is just a company not having any balls to say, you know what? They could have just come out and said, we respect your opinion, but we're going to sell what we sell because we're selling to adults. We're selling a product that's perfectly legal. And plus, we're selling a product that explicitly says it's for 18-year-olds and children are not allowed to buy in our stores. If they said that, these people would have yelled and bitched for a week or so, but then they would have went away. Doing anything like this gives power to those that should not have power to dictate this. And so what this can happen now is it will give this group a power to do this for something else, and then another game, and another game. And you can say that, oh, again, this isn't censorship. No, but what they are trying to do, though, is sort of tilt the marketplace. Because now, what if this happens to five or six other AAA games that Target doesn't put them in their store, and then maybe GameStop follows suit, even if it's in one country or two countries or Europe? The AAA publishers will take notice and might say this might not be worth our trouble to then have a game with these elements if there might be a backlash or stores won't be willing to put it on shelves. And then at that point, then that becomes a sort of infringement on the creativity of this publisher. When in the end, it should be the marketplace that decides if a game sells or not, or any entertainment medium for that fashion. If you do not like a video game, that is your right. It is your right not to like the content of a video game or a movie. Then you vote with your wallet and don't buy it. Don't promote it. That is how these things should be handled, because we are adults.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know where the people who started the petition were coming from, and that's awful, obviously. And then I didn't know that...
It's awful. But you know what? There's games coming out with war every year, and we have soldiers coming back with horrible PTSD.
I get it. I know.
Anyone can have a problem with anything.
But that's where I'm going, is there's so much more that has these issues that targeting... You need to... If this is what's problematic to you, targeting one game isn't going to fucking do anything. You need to target the mindset of people and see if this is actually something that they want. And if they don't, like you said, get them to vote with their wallet. You can't just go after one game. I don't know. I don't play GTA 5. Why? Because I don't like... I generally don't like hyper-violent games like that. I don't play GTA 5 or Grand Theft Auto games for the exact reasons that people are talking about, and I am therefore voting with my wallet. It is not something that I want. But like I said, I just... My bigger issue with it before I read into it and I knew where the petition came from, I just think it's ridiculous because that's...
Well, first of all, it's totally wrong where they're coming from, too, because, again, you can kill anyone in the game.
Well, you took it right out of my mouth. That's what I'm trying to say. It's not encouraging violence against women. It's encouraging violence against anyone and everyone in the game. I mean, people buy the game to play the storyline, but most people buy the game to... put on all the cheat codes and create a pileup and see how many cops, citizens, women, men, and women, both, you know, they can take down before they get killed in a blazing gunfight. I mean, the whole game is fucking horrible.
Yeah,
if you're going to attack the game, attack the whole game for being awful, because if it was the sexual abuse simulator, my reaction here would be a lot different, but it's not. This is an equal opportunity game that lets you do horrible things to all genders, almost all ages, across the board. Whatever you want to do, you can do it. So to focus on one thing, like I said, it's spending effort on I think, a valid fight that needs to be taken, but you need to fight that differently. You can't fight it by targeting a copy of Grand Theft Auto 5 in a Target.
Well, that we're getting another issue about, is it valid to attack an entertainment medium because of an issue depicted in it? That's a whole other issue. But what I'll say is this, is that you're absolutely right about it's equal opportunity. You know, I haven't seen police associations come out against these games because you're killing cops as much as you want. You know, I mean, that could be an issue that could be talked about, and they're not doing that. So... I just think that people have to live their lives, and there are horrible things that happen to people, of course, but there's entertainment that happens, and there's been violence against all groups in every entertainment medium going back 100 years, going back to the advent of moving pictures, you know, the what they used to call them, you know, then the talkies, they had it sound. And so you just have to... Again, vote with your wallet. That's it. People don't like to complain about dictating what goes on in other people's bedrooms. They shouldn't. Don't dictate what I can play in my living room. You have no right to do that at all.
So, there's a 20th anniversary PlayStation 4. I believe it was different among the regions. And it was, $500, I believe?
Five or six? Retail?
I think it was five retail. And it's gray. Looks like the original PlayStation. It was pretty cool. But they were hyper limited, and now they're going for what? How many? How much? What are they currently going for? An insane amount
of money?
$2,000
they're trying to go for on eBay?
Really? That's insane.
And there's been 12.3K of these produced. So over 12,000 of these systems in your eyes. Just why? Over 12,000, I believe, is the production run of these 20th anniversary of the PlayStation 1 PS4s.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess they couldn't put out 20th anniversary of the PS1s, no one would buy them. Actually, I'd buy one, but anyway. So it's interesting. What's interesting about this? The fact that they've jumped up in value so much, the fact that people don't realize that 12,000 is a lot of production run for the value to get bumped up that much.
Yeah,
is it people just being impatient again? Like every week we're talking about this, people just being impatient buying these things when there's more on the way, you know?
Yeah, as a record collector, I always pay attention when a record is coming out in any sort of limited form or if it's a re-release. They'll usually tell you how many units are getting pressed. And since record collecting is pretty niche, if it's more than 3K, I know that I can probably get one. If it's 5K, I know I can definitely get one. 12,000 of these is not a shitload, but I don't believe it's enough to really bump the price up to $2,000.
Sure, and this is not something that could be taken advantage of easily, at least, by scalpers, because $500 or $600 each is a lot of capital to put into some of this, and it's a much bigger risk than even, say, when the Wii came out and that was, you know, $200.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? This is a lot more difficult to say, all right, I want to try to get all the ones I can. First of all, it's a much limited more supply, but now I got to invest, like, $4,000 to get 8 of these. You know, that's a lot different than saying I'm going to invest $800, you know what I mean, to get 4 Wiis when they came out back in like 2000, you know, and 6. Well, I can't do my math right, 1600.
Yeah, I mean, that's for scalpers to be doing that, that's a pretty big risk. And I guess right now it's paying off, but I don't know. It's not like 500 or 1,000. I mean, 12.3K is...
Yeah, there's a lot on eBay right now. There's a ton on eBay. It's almost like everyone that has bought one is just to flip it. You know, there's a lot on eBay. It's not like there's 20 on eBay right now. I'm easily looking. There are at least four pages of this. So that means there's at least 200 on
eBay. And that's kind of when you know that your attempt to buy and flip has maybe gone south, is when you suddenly start seeing a ton of them up on eBay. Now, if in 4 months there's only a couple here and there, then they might start going for more. But
But this is probably one of those items that's always flipped. How many people are going to buy the PS4 20th anniversary just to play it, honestly?
My coworker almost did. He already had one, though. But literally, he was hovering over the button, and I'm like, dude...
How much was he willing to pay?
No, he had a chance to get one, like...
Out of retail price?
Yeah, I think he had... I don't know how you got them. I think you had to order them directly from Sony. I actually don't know, but he said he was ready to click, and it was $500, and I said, that's stupid. He's like, well, it looked cool. I'm like, yeah, but you already have a PS4. You don't need one.
What were these available? You said they were just direct?
I don't know. I'm guessing. Or at least some were available online, because he was talking about how he was going to buy one on the internet.
Oh, they do look cool. They're silver, you know? They're a little bit thicker.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, you look at your system once in a while. The free PlayStation 1 theme that plays the startup every time you go back to the menu bar is way cooler. It does. It plays the original PlayStation startup every time you go back to the menu. It's pretty neat. But, yeah, it's interesting to see these. I don't know. It's like everyone wants everything to be fucking collectible these days.
Well, we saw this with the Zelda Hyrule Warriors limited edition in New York. We're talking about this every week now, that how people are turning these things into collectibles, even with the Amiibos. They're trying to turn the harder to find ones into collectibles. Anything that's new can be made in more quantity. That's why I want to stress that anything new can be made in more quantity whenever they want. Even if they say it's limited, they can come out with more.
I still don't necessarily think they will. I know they can, but I don't agree with you that they will. I mean, how often have we really actually seen that? At the same point in time, I just don't think that everything's a collectible.
Well, no, that's the other thing. Obviously, that's up to the person buying it. If you think this is collectible, it's a varying system that you want, so it's collectible to you, sure.
If it's collectible to you, right, but I just mean in the true sense of rarity with worth.
It's insane to think that 12,300 or something produced would be worth $2,000 each. That makes no sense economically at all versus the amount of people that actually would be willing to pay that. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
This could be another one sort of thing where you said before, like the ET carts, that wait until the fervor dies down and then see where it falls. Then maybe you can buy one at a more reasonable price.
Well, let's see. You do the math on this because I'm bad. There was a limited record that was pressed in 10,000.
$10,000.
Okay. It was $40.
$40.
It regularly goes for $70 to $100 now, so let's just call it $85.
I clicked on my clock by accident. Okay.
What kind of markup is that?
That's 100%. 40 to 80 is 100% markup.
Okay, so then what's the markup on these?
This would be times four. That'd be 400% if it's 2,000.
Okay, so yeah, double the markup on it compared to something like a record.
So maybe we can see it drop down to 1,000 if you really want it at that point. So you don't want one, Ian? Should I get one?
They're neat.
Should I trade in my my
Danny Sullivan's Indie Heat?
No. I wasn't going to say that. I was going to say my Don Con Jr. Math. I was going to say that.
Fuck off. Why don't you talk about this Terminator Genesis trailer I know nothing about and give zero shits about?
Thanks for making it interesting for our audience. This was a movie that was interesting just because I totally forgot they were making it. Sometimes, doesn't usually happen that huge blockbuster movies, you totally forget they're making them, then you see the trailer come out, you're like, wow, that came out of nowhere. But, Terminator Salvation came out like 3 years ago to mixed reviews. It had Sam Worthington in it, who to me is the most blandest action star alive, and Christian Bale, who got more famous for yelling at the lights guy. He was like, get the fuck off the set, you idiot. It was hysterical. It showed how insane Christian Bale was.
Yep.
He went on like a 10-minute rant about the lighting guy.
That's all I know about that movie.
He was like, oh, you're a nice guy. We're fucking done professionally. That's basically what he was saying to this guy. This poor lighting guy got in the way of a shot. Anyway, so Terminator Salvation comes out, which basically takes place after the nukes get set off in Terminator Land, where the nukes Skynet decides that humans are the threat, which we always are. Kills all of us, but it's right before you know, the T-800 skeleton monster machines come out to try to eliminate all. It's like that weird in-between period. There's big, huge robots that are being created by Skynet to kill us, but we don't see the T-800 endoskeletons yet. This movie skips past, you know, Christian Bale to an extent, and now we're at the point where it's the future war.
I was going to say, this is supposed to be the future war,
now we're
right?
at the officially the future war that you see at the beginning of the first Terminator movie, and then Terminator 2, the flashbacks, the point where they send back the Terminators.
Right.
This is what we wanted to see. I never saw all of Terminator Salvation just because I didn't give a shit about that.
Right.
I wanted to see the laser guns that they have, and you have those huge, basically the T2 arcade game. We want to see that shit. This is what this movie is. You think. The trailer comes out then, and then all of a sudden, it's a clusterfuck mix of Terminator 1 and 2, where everyone's sending back multiple Terminators back to the point of maybe after Terminator 1, but before Terminator 2. It seems they send back another Arnold, but maybe there's still the Arnold T-800 that existed still, who's older. They send back another T-1000 as a cop with liquid metal. And it looks like, to me, a remake of both Terminator 1 and 2, with tons of action, with set pieces that looked exactly the same as the first two movies. And the first thing I thought was, I really have no inclination of seeing this movie at all. It looks like they rehashed the other two movies so much that it really became, this is the definition of an unnecessary sequel.
Right.
When you literally have the same plot elements from Terminator 1 and 2, the same villains from Terminator 1 and 2, and you have Arnold back in. And I love seeing Arnold back in movies. Like to see him back acting. He's iconic.
It is like I am coming all the time.
Yeah.
Fucking Arnold.
Sure. But that was his old quote. That's right. When he's working out.
When
with
he's
his
working
muscles.
Out.
The blood through the veins. So, again, go watch the trailer and see that for somehow also, I guess we're still 5 or 6 months out of the movie, the T-1000 effects of liquid metal didn't look any better than 1991 somehow. But that shows you just how well, I guess, James Cameron was working on the effects back then. But not much more else to say about Terminator Genisys. It looks a lot more interesting than Terminator's whatever it was, Salvation, or whatever the fuck it was from a few years ago. Am I even saying the name of it? Or was that the TV show? I always forget there was a Terminator TV show for 2 years that I saw one episode of.
There was Terminator 3 as well. That was a great film.
That was actually not bad.
Are you fucking kidding me? That was awful.
Not bad. But the next trailer we're going to be talking about real quick.
Are we really? I don't even watch Bond. I didn't know there was a trailer for this.
No, I was going to talk about that. I was going to skip around. But they announced a James Bond Spectre movie that I will see next year. I'm enjoying a lot. I was going to talk about the Star Wars Force Awakens teaser trailer. It was released right after Thanksgiving.
Yeah, that one was interesting. I mean, I don't know what more you can say about a teaser trailer. What you can say about a teaser trailer.
It teased. It was a trailer.
It teased. It was interesting to me that there was a white female, a black man, and a Latino man in the trailer, but no white people.
Where was there a Latino man?
The X-Wing pilot.
I could have been tell, but okay.
Yeah, just interesting to me. It seems like they're going for a diverse cast. I thought
there was no females in the other Star Wars.
No, but I'm just saying in the teaser trailer. I mean, these are the three characters they choose to focus on. What does that say about story? What does that say about potential main characters that aren't throwback characters? It's interesting to me. That's I don't normally like to read into teaser trailers, but that's interesting to me.
Well, the stormtrooper you see was black.
That's what I said.
You can't say African American because Tatooine. I don't know.
Okay, great, Pat. Anyways, the part where the X-Wings were going over the water gave me some chills. I thought that was pretty cool.
That was a glaring sort of, I guess, I don't want to say mishap, but lost opportunity of the original trilogy was that you didn't see an X-Wing or TIE Fighter fight happen over a planet.
Right.
You saw them taking off from planets, but you never saw them actually battle, which to me is far more interesting because there's actually, you know, the physics involved of actually dogfighting, which is what the space battles are based on, was George Lucas's love of old World War I and World War II dogfighting, which means, you know, combat in the air, but yet we never saw that really over a planet in the sky, so that's going to be at least in the first movie, which is cool to see.
So I thought, I mean, you know, that shot was really cool. The Millennium Falcon at the end, you know, gives everyone warm fuzzies or whatever. And I don't have any problem with the new lightsaber. Just don't really care. Why are we talking about the new lightsaber for fucking weeks?
I think it's silly but cool the same way. you know, the double sort of Darth, what the fuck was his name in the first?
Darth Maul.
That was cool.
They're both totally impractical, and no one cares because it's going to create some interesting fight sequence moments.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, people are talking about, well, you know, on the guard, you can slice through the part of it.
What if we curve it a little bit? I mean, you I don't...
Know, was that your Adam Sandler?
I know.
But, I mean, people are like, well, if you're wielding a lightsaber, your finger will get cut off. And it's like, I don't want to look into it that deep. These are laser swords. So, I mean,
yeah.
We're already suspending our disbelief enough that I can buy a little, maybe it's an ancient claymore type of, you know, makeshift sort of.
Maybe his fighting style accounts for the fact that he might lose a finger. We don't fucking know because it's a teaser trailer.
Maybe they shoot out like darts. There are sort of some blade weapons that do that sort of thing.
And maybe they'll change it. But I cannot believe that has been the focus of conversation for weeks.
But that was sort of the centerpiece of the teaser trailer. You know, I guess.
I mean, all said,
this is what's important to me. George Lucas is not involved.
Yeah.
That's what's important to me.
Oh, don't let Billy from the Game Chasers know that.
Well, he was just trolling people.
He'll just skin you alive.
He was just trolling people. But,
Was he?
Supposedly, he was interviewed and said he hadn't even watched the teaser trailer, which tells me a hell of a lot about George Lucas' personality.
He's a whiny little bitch.
I guess. That's part of it. And he just wanted to get paid more billions of dollars and had nothing to do with something that he sort of started. But this is what I always said. J.J. Abrams is directing it. If you watch the first two Star Trek movies, they are Star Wars movies to me in tone and how the action is set. They're not really sci-fi at all. They don't really have... You know what I mean? They're not really traditional Star Trek stories to me. So if he just translated that look and feel and even narrative to Star Wars, they're going to be way more successful creatively and critically than the prequel trilogy. They're using sets. They're using models. They're going back to the way that the original trilogy were created. That alone, the look and feel... If you look at the look and feel of the teaser... It even looks... You're never going to have that look of the original trilogy. People that whine about the look, you're not using the same cameras. You're not using the same limited tech. It's not going to look like the original trilogy aesthetically, but they are filming on actual film. It's not digital, so it's going to look a little bit closer.
Yeah.
Because just of that alone, well,
actual,
you know,
film,
things like that.
Actual film, models, actual sets, and actual sets. Models. That's the big thing for me is models. That said, I'm still... I feel like I burned up all my goodwill with Star Wars. I'm not sure how much I'm really gonna care, but when it comes out, will I see it? I don't know. I need to see more. I need to see more than the teaser.
If I sat through episodes 2 and 3, knowing that they're gonna be mediocre to garbage, just for the investment, I'm gonna see these because this cannot be worse than Attack of the Clones and Phantom Menace. It will be by default probably better than Revenge of the Sith. When people go, "Oh yeah, Revenge of the Sith was good." No, it was good in comparison to Episode 1 and 2. Doesn't make it a good movie. It makes it better than those movies.
Revenge of the Sith, as I think we stated recently, Revenge of the Sith was good on paper.
Revenge of the Sith was
good in concept.
Revenge of the Sith was 5 out of 10. That's at best. It was two-star movie.
I will give you that at best.
So I'm gonna see it. I'm excited, and I don't think that J.J. Abrams is doing the second and third one, and I like the fact that they're switching up the directors, because that worked well, you know, for the original trilogy, especially with Empire, which, again, Empire, best one. Lucas had almost nothing to do with it.
Right.
Let's move on. We've talked about this in the past, and I'm sad and happy about the developments of this. Basically, it's come out through hacked. Sony had their emails hacked up to a high sort of level, up to, like, their CEOs and high-level communication. And supposedly, words coming out, it could have been the North Koreans doing it in retaliation to them producing this interview movie coming out starring Seth Rogen about them trying to kill Kim Jong-un.
This whole topic, by the way, once we get into like this is just ridiculous. I don't know that I buy any of it.
It's just interesting that could be it, but that movie is coming out soon.
Yes.
Which is a dark comedy. So the word is, and we speculated on this, that Marvel was trying to get the rights back to do Spider-Man on film in some way, because they have Civil War coming up, and Spider-Man played a crucial part of that in the comics. Why not get old Webhead back into the movies? But they have to negotiate with Sony, who owns the rights in perpetuity, because they keep putting out mediocre movies. Even though I like the Amazing Spider-Man 1 and 2 better than the Raimi films, they were not up to snuff still. Well, Spider-Man 2 was better than them, but whatever. So it came out first that they tried, and it seemed like up to late November even, there were talks that sort of fell apart between Sony and Marvel to make this happen. And this is what every fanboy wants to see.
Even more so, they were talking about getting together to meet in January to kind of finalize the potential deal to get Spider-Man's appearance in the Marvel Universe.
At least the appearance, if not taking over the film production in some capacity. So it came out that that this fell through. People were sad. However, then in response, Latino Review, which is one of the better sort of source of news for movie rumors and things of that nature, came out saying...
Rambling articles.
Okay, but they have been around forever, Latino Review.
Okay, maybe I just don't know anything about movies, but this reads like a wacky conspiracy theorist's fucking diatribe.
It's coming from a source that's been good to them before.
Okay.
That their talks are still ongoing between Sony and Marvel to get this done, to get Spider-Man to appear. So supposedly what was offered, very interesting, that they offered a 60-40 split. Marvel would finance 60%, Sony 40% to do Spider-Man movies, and then Marvel would get creative control. So then Marvel puts in the bigger risk. They know more what they're doing. Sony probably realizes at this point that Marvel knows what they're doing more than them with these comic characters. It seems like a win-win.
Right.
And plus, the movie will probably make a hell of a lot more with Marvel behind it than Sony. Because Amazing Spider-Man 2 and Amazing Spider-Man did not do nearly as well as they should.
No, it showed in the emails that Amazing Spider-Man 2 in particular underperformed grossly.
And this is the flagship Marvel character we're talking about. There's no reason for him to not be able to do as well as Captain America or Guardians of the freaking Galaxy. The name recognition alone, he should be up there, and he hasn't been. So the good news is that this could still be, from the looks of it, it makes sense for this to be worked on. I think the word is from this sort of a Latino Review article is that Sony's not pleased. And if I was a big head of Sony, I wouldn't be pleased either with how these Amazing Spider-Man movies are performing.
No.
And the one sort of positive note here is that it seems like Sony Pictures wants to do quality films. Like it's like a goal for them to want these to be quality films versus a product. And that was my biggest argument about Amazing Spider-Man 2 is that it came across more like a product than its own movie. Yeah. It was filmed like a product.
You've said that the whole time. I mean, from the placements to just how the movie was, it wasn't a movie. It was, here's your yearly, or your Spider-Man movie.
Here's your product.
Yeah,
here's your comic book for this
one. Order of Spider-Man 2.
Yes, exactly. One order of a major $500 million film, please. So they have time to work this out. They're not going to be filming probably Captain America Winter Soldier until probably, I'd say, February or March of next year.
You mean Civil War?
Excuse me, yes. Captain America Civil War. They're not going to be filming it until at least the spring. If they work it out, they can fit him into that. They're also supposedly doing reshoots and going back to maybe do more shots for Avengers Age of Ultron in January. Usually they do that before these big films. You have 4 full months to put it in these. That's enough time to do it. So if they work this out, maybe you could get a Spider-Man cameo in Avengers 2 just to sort of say, wow, he's in this Marvel universe. Everyone would go batshit crazy.
Yeah, I feel like it's wishful thinking, but
I'm optimistic this is going to happen.
Okay, I feel like it's wishful thinking that you're going to get him in Avengers 2. Although I do think 2 quick shots of him in that movie, they don't have to be long. I feel like if you can establish him in Avengers 2, it just is... Just as being present. He doesn't even have to have speaking role.
You don't need Andrew Garfield. You get Andrew Garfield in a booth to record a few lines. You have all the Avengers are fighting all the, like, say they're fighting all the robots. You have Spider-Man come in and take out one.
You need
and
one,
say something. You know what I mean?
You need one good quip and he's out.
Yeah.
And then that way it's not so awkward when you drop him into Civil War and he's a central character.
Yeah, you have all the, they're trying to fight off all these robots. Spider-Man swings in. He goes, oh, I should stick to Queens more. Swings out. Crowd goes fucking ape shit, you know? And then now you're like, holy shit, what's going to happen now?
You should write a Spider-Man comic, Pat.
CM Punk's writing Thor. I can write a Spider-Man comic. So if they pull this off, though, I think... The X-Men, we always said, we almost say, who cares about the X-Men at this point?
I do.
We always say that, who cares about, because at least they're on some sort of decent track.
They're on a path to recovery.
On Fox. And it's almost like, it'd almost be hard to fit the mutants back in to the Marvel Universe, but Spider-Man should be there. He obviously belongs there. He'd be welcome in Civil War. I think I'd be totally fine keeping Andrew Garfield as Spider-Man. I think he's been doing a pretty good job. And have Marvel do a couple of the movies. Because Sony, from all reports, has no fucking clue what they're doing with, again, the flagship character, probably the second or third most well-known superhero in the world. They have no idea how to do this franchise. There's words that they're doing a Sinister Six movie, then a Venom standalone movie, and then doing a female Spider themed movie somehow. And then this has been confirmed that they were talking about doing an Aunt May film. Like, yeah. They don't know what the hell they're doing. So,
well, they were going to do it. There was at least talks. But yeah.
The whole point is that
they have no
these are movies that should not be made.
No.
You know, that's the whole point.
No, you don't do a Sinister Six film. You certainly don't do a Venom film until Spider-Man is well established and liked. And I'm sorry, between the initial trilogy and these two, you don't have a Spider-Man that people actually give a shit about going to see.
Sure.
No one's going to care about a Venom movie.
No. And to me, Venom's not an interesting character. Anyway, that's a whole other separate subject.
Great. Don't want to talk about it right
so,
now.
So it sounds like Sony back in Japan is pissed about this, so they're willing to play ball and might just shit-can the people on the U.S. side, just get out of the way to make this happen. I'm looking forward to that. I'm holding out hope that we're going to see this happen and then get a proper sort of Spider-Man movie done via Marvel. Everyone would win. Sony would win. They'd make just as much money probably overall and realize, hey, we have a viable franchise now, and we don't have to worry about the creative shit, because there is some honor to this, that you own this property and you're not putting out the best. You know what I mean? I know people always say it's about money, but at some point you do want to put out a good film.
No, I mean, at some point, no one wants to hear that they're putting out crap.
Sure. And they do see Marvel, Iron Man 3 making, like, you know, a freaking $1 billion, and you can't put out a Spider-Man film that can compete.
That's a film that most people don't care for. I mean, I loved Iron Man 3, but but a lot of people didn't like Iron Man 3, and it's outperforming.
It's outperforming the Spider-Man movies.
So, Pat, you want to talk some wrestling?
Wrestling talk.
Let's talk some wrestling.
Oh man, we've started late, but we're gonna. This has been a whirlwind sort of month for CM Punk. Whirlwind week. So right after Thanksgiving, was it right after Thanksgiving? It was. He did a podcast with Colt Cabana, the Art of Wrestling podcast, which is a really good podcast if you actually listen to it. He does one now. Jericho does one. Stone Cold does one. It seems like all these wrestlers are getting the podcast.
I've heard the Jericho one was good, and I've heard the Colt Cabana one is good. I would hope that the
Stone Cold?
I've heard the Stone Cold one is good. I've heard the Colt Cabana one is good. I would hope the Jericho one is good, but I haven't listened to it.
So CM Punk appeared on the Colt Cabana podcast, Art of Wrestling, basically telling all, basically like a shoot interview, and Colt Cabana is his friend. It seems like lots of things go over, but CM Punk walked out of WWE after the Royal Rumble. He revealed that he was injury stricken, which when you look back at his matches late 2013, it was obvious he was moving at a much slower pace.
Right, and as anyone who follows wrestling knows, they don't want you to, they want you back in the ring as quick as you possibly can be.
Yes.
And he had developed kind of a mass on his back.
Well, again, this is all from his side, so
this
is his point.
He had developed a mass on his back, and
I think he said it was like right under his trunks or right at the waistline.
Yeah, and the doctors had cleared him, the company doctors had cleared him and hadn't really looked at it, but it kept giving him pain. And by the time he finally got it looked at, it was a MRSA infection. That's staff. That's important. That's huge. You know, the doctors.
That's a bad infection.
That's an incredibly bad infection. And the doctor said it's good you came to us now because you could have wrestled yourself to death.
Well, the later doctor said that, the WWE doctor.
No, I know. Not the WWE doctor. The later doctor said you could have wrestled yourself to death with this infection. I've known people who have, had MRSA, and they've had to be put basically in quarantine. I mean, you're not allowed to do anything with this. I mean, essentially, you are to stay put until the antibiotic regimen takes it out. That laid him up for a while, and he decided he was going to take doctor's advice and actually take the time to heal up. But at this point in time, he's still working under... He's still technically an employee of WWE.
Yeah, so CM Punk was never actually fired or quit from his point of view. After January, he was just taking time off.
Right.
He was still, by his perspective, employed. They never told him he was fired. He never said he quit. So what happened was, over the course of the next 4 or 5 months, it started with, remember that Raw in Chicago in, what was that, late February? They talked about that specifically. They trashed him. They called him a quitter. On pay-per-views, Stephanie McMahon has come out, Triple H had made reference to him being a quitter. All the while, he was still technically employed with the company, or so he thought he was involved. And then it turns out, and Vince McMahon confirmed it on Stone Cold's podcast, he got his termination letters the day of his wedding.
Well, I had heard that he had gotten a call from...
He got a text from Triple H.
Right.
Triple H is now the COO of the company. And 2 days before, after he hadn't heard back forever, he texted CM Punk saying, hey, do you have time to talk? And CM Punk said, I'm planning my wedding. I'm going on my honeymoon. After that, I'll come back and talk to you day you know, one.
Right.
And then 2 days later, he gets a FedEx saying that you are fired on his wedding day, which is, wow, that's, you know, WWE does some fucked up things out of spite it comes to you, but that's really bad.
Yeah, that's low. Real.
And I have a feeling that was Triple H and not Vince. I don't feel like Vince would want to do that and totally burn a bridge like that.
As Vince gets older, Vince mellows. A younger Vince probably would have done that, but I don't feel like that modern day Vince is sending people termination papers on their wedding day.
Yeah, the guy's in the 60s. I don't see him doing that.
I just don't.
So we're going over the map with it. So basically, this was not handled correctly, I think, from any perspective.
No.
CM Punk, and I said this to you in private, that, and you might laugh at this, and people listening might laugh, I see at least a little bit of myself in Phil Brooks. Just the fact that, and this goes back to my last job, my corporate job, I always was one to speak my mind about how I saw situations, how I saw people acting, much to my own detriment, even if I knew it was the truth and others did. I always spoke up about things because I wanted to see things done right. But sometimes that hurts you in the long run, because a lot of times companies don't want that, even if the person saying it actually is steering in the right direction, they will spite themselves. They don't want to give control or power over to people they don't think deserve it.
Right.
And CM Punk is a prime example of that. Someone who speaks his mind and speaks up about earlier this year about it was Daniel Bryan's time, Batista should not be given the main event. And he was right about all those things.
Sure.
And that's what they ended up doing. They ended up giving the fans and Daniel Bryan what they deserve, is that he gets the WrestleMania title shot. And this is what CM Punk always was. He was always a guy that, very talented, very smart, but maybe too outspoken for his own good and too brash. And so guys like Triple H saw it as disrespectful. Guys like Vince liked that. Guys like Triple H were like, no, you are a punk, but you are what your name is. You don't deserve it.
Right. And that's another weird thing about it. At this point, because Vince, I'm not trying to say Vince has done a face turn, but I do feel like as Vince gets older, he does look upon the younger guys a bit more favorably than he did, especially the ones who are coming up and are a bit more brash and upfront. For instance, Sami Zayn. I feel like Sami Zayn's probably the type of guy that Vince likes. Why? Because Sami Zayn works his ass off. He's a good wrestler, and he's going for what he wants. Whereas I feel like Triple H is in that in-between era, kind of like where he sees, like it was in the Monday Night Wars and just after, he's at the age where he's seeing all of his power and importance slip away.
Sure.
And I don't think he likes seeing that go to the younger people.
And that was one of it, wrestlers. On his podcast, CM Punk talked about that, and he was totally right, and when it happened, it bothered me. Back in 2011, at the end of the Summer of Punk, when he blew up and went mainstream after dropping the pipe bomb in Vegas, and CM Punk was the first sort of mainstream attention, it got me to watch wrestling again. I hadn't watched wrestling in 3 or 4 years before the summer of 2011. That got me back into it.
Sure, it got most people back into it. It wasn't me, I was later, but still.
So Punk was the hottest wrestler on the planet, should have been pushed to the moon, should have been like Stone Cold, 97, where he's just beating the shit out of everyone. What do they do? Triple H gets himself involved in a feud. He actually beats CM Punk in a match. Even though it had Nash interference, it was bullshit. It sort of snuffed out at least a little bit of CM Punk's fire when he was the hottest guy going, and it was terrible. Did he recover from that? Somewhat, but it should never have happened.
No.
Never should have happened.
And I don't think he ever fully really recovered from
should
that.
Should never would have happened. He should have been the hottest guy going. It should have been, you know, up to WrestleMania, main event. You know what I mean? And he called out Triple H for that, and he was totally correct. When you see Triple H get involved with stuff like Sting coming back, you see a little bit of that too, where Triple H can't totally leave the spotlight. He's like the new Vince McMahon, the authority figure. Just get out of the way. And so A lot of things were said during this podcast. It was 2 hours. I implore you to listen to it. It's just fascinating. It shows you, though, at the end of the day, while CM Punk had valid complaints, at the end of the day, he has to realize that not just it's a profession he's chosen, it's a type of profession. Especially WWE, you are part of a traveling circus act, basically.
Yes.
That's what it comes down to. You're part of a traveling circus act, and even though you're an independent contractor, which is bullshit in WWE land.
That, yeah, I know.
And that
I
was
know.
One. I think that was one of the reasons why they actually gave CM Punk probably a sizable settlement, is because he threatened to sue them over that, and then that could have blew up in WWE's face. Where
right.
They could have been facing a union or a.
So quickly, for those of you who don't know, no one is actually employed by the.
Technically.
Wrestlers
aren't
WWE.
Technically employed. Even though they have things like no compete clauses, which
right.
for independent contractors is totally illegal. Stuff like that.
Quote, you are called an independent contractor so that they can avoid giving you things such as health care, but your independent contract with them comes with a bunch of do nots.
Yes.
And that's. Horseshit.
And CM Punk, I think, was threatening to sue him over that, and that's when they finally didn't get cleared up until the end of October. All this stuff.
I mean, I hate to say this, but if you're a wrestler, I mean, this is your industry, mm-hmm. and that's kind of my thing with Punk. I don't hate Punk, but at some point, dude, shut up. I mean,
yeah.
you made your bed, and you made your bed nicely, and you did things right, and you were in the right, you said the right things, you helped the right people, but you fucked over your own position, and now you have to deal with that. If you don't want to play by the WWE's rules, there aren't many other places you can go.
Sure. Oh, he could have went to New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Well, I mean, he could have gone back to Japan.
TNA would have gave him a ton of money.
I just mean, if he wanted to wrestle for actual money in the U.S.
Well, this is where I like Punk. I like his attitude about these things, but he has to come to the table then and fight for things. Because at the end of the day, when he was rushed back, when he said Vince was like, oh, you know, he had multiple surgeries, you know, his hip was messed up, Ryback gave him a bad injury. That's a whole other conversation. We can talk about Ryback real quick later. But at the end of the day, he rushed back himself. He could have told WWE after all these injuries he's had, bad rib injury, no, I will not come back early. I want to be healed.
Right.
And what's the WWE going to do? They weren't going to fire him because he was still the top two or three biggest people in the company.
Right.
They weren't going to do that. It was his decision to come back early. And obviously, it's really bad that he got this staph infection that I mean, he could have sued over this. This is probably another reason why they settled with him, because he probably could have had a really bad lawsuit against WWE for letting a potentially life-threatening injury go unchecked by their doctor.
Right.
But he should have had it checked out then way early, not let it go months and months and months. He's still an adult at the end of the day.
Yeah.
If the working environment's bad, you got to do something about it yourself.
Right.
And I think it's going to get better when obviously it hasn't. You know, we're talking 2011, he almost didn't re-sign for these very reasons. He hated how he was treated. So he said, I'll give it the old college try and do it again. But when the bad stuff happens again, then it's on you. It's on you. The same shit keeps happening. And I had someone that complained about their bad job to me for like 8-9 years. And I'm like, dude, fucking leave then or do something about it. If you keep complaining about it, nothing's going to happen. So you know what? The bad working environment, he said it wasn't fun and wrestlers being treated like shit. If that was the case, if you really had the balls and you had the sort of internal strength, why didn't he then do this sort of class action lawsuit or go after them for this independent contractor stuff then? Why didn't he then? If that's really where his conviction lied, wouldn't he be doing not just himself but every other wrestler a world of favor by doing that? If he thought he had a good lawsuit, and supposedly he hired a really good lawyer to look into that sort of thing,
mm-hmm.
then he should have done it if he had the conviction. But I don't think CM Punk, I think he talks a good game, but I don't think he totally, even himself, believes all of it. Because a lot of things like, I'm not doing this for the money, blah, 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 but then money factors into it, and it's like, okay, what's going on
here?
Well,
his fucking... I don't know that I would like him much as a person, and I think he is a lot of talk, and a lot of that talk sounds right, but I don't know that he can back it up, I guess, is what it
sure.
comes down to. He can say a lot of the right... He can say a lot of things, and he can say a lot of the right things, but I don't think he can back that up.
Sure. Lots of other things he revealed. Him and Ryback, he the only guy he really went off on in a negative way overall was Ryback.
Yeah, steroid guy.
That was an unfortunate statement, just because you think that they test against steroids. Maybe CM Punk knows something we don't. But Everyone looked bad with that. I think CM Punk shouldn't have gone after Ryback. Still, Ryback was still very green. He's improved now recently when he's come back, but he's talking a year and a half ago, at least a year ago, more than that, very, very green. Still.
Ryback is still not great. He's green. I just think for Punk, you don't say, it sounds so petty to go after someone. I mean, you go after the management, sure, in this interview, mm-hmm. but this isn't actually a shoot.
It's not supposed to be a shoot interview.
Right, it's not supposed to be a shoot. You know, this is not you just going off on everyone. You know, and especially the steroid thing, I would watch my mouth very carefully when saying things like that.
Yeah, that's libel.
Exactly.
That's slander, not libel. Slander.
It's slander, because while I don't necessarily believe that the WWE always plays by the rules, there has been a lot of investigation into that stuff, and you can't... Unless you have evidence that you're willing to bring forth, you can't say someone's roided up.
And plus, that might piss off other guys with big bodies like Cena, who, for all intents and purposes, has never been linked to steroids and just has a big body, supplements, and a lot of workout. You can get that big. It's difficult, but you can do that.
Sure.
So other guys like that, it's just bad for a wrestler to call the guys steroid users. That was bad. But Ryback didn't come out of this looking good either, because Ryback's taking shots to CM Punk going back to January.
Yeah.
And Ryback had a very distasteful tweet. One of CM Punk's biggest problems with Ryback is that early on, I guess, in their feud, and this is after CM Punk, I think, had his ribs broken by Ryback over a kick. He basically went to Vince and said, I don't want to work with this guy because he's dangerous. Ryback gorilla press slammed Punk onto a table from a raised position and missed the table with CM Punk crashing down almost entirely onto the concrete floor, and he said really messed up his pelvis for a while. And then he went to Ryback supposedly and said, are you just stupid? Or are you doing this to me on purpose? And Ryback basically, CM Punk Ryback claims I'm just stupid. Ryback actually tweeted a picture of all these Ryback's figures standing around a CM Punk figure, like broken up with like a table. Very distasteful. If I was CM Punk and saw that, next time I saw Ryback, there would be something physical going down.
Yeah.
Because even if he did it by accident, Ryback, and was stupid, you are putting your life into another wrestler's hands every time you get out there, and to make a joke out of something that could have killed Punk. You go look at that clip, it's bad.
Yeah,
I remember when that happened and thinking, oh, okay, but it turns out that falling 8 feet onto concrete on your back, you can't fake that. That's gonna fucking hurt.
Yeah,
you know,
you can make that tweet a storyline joke if Punk had come out of that okay, but if Punk actually came out of that hurt, that's disrespectful.
Disrespectful, really bad. I think WWE probably said to Ryback, you better fucking tone your shit down. After we brought you back now, and they're pushing him big.
Well,
so Ryback,
he was nowhere, and now
he was nowhere. He was injured. Now he come back, and now he's being pushed out as his baby. Ryback, though, that was very disrespectful. I think to any wrestler to joke about seriously injuring another wrestler by accident is fucking messed up.
Yeah,
really messed up.
Yeah,
just as messed up, if not more, than calling a guy a steroid guy. But anyway, so CM Punk's got this all off his. You know, all this weight's off his shoulders. He's married to AJ Lee. Everything seems to be going great. And now he announces, semi-shockingly, that he signed a multi-fight contract with UFC.
Here's my major problem. Okay, I have a lot of major problems with it. But, I mean, the one problem is, dude, this is also where I think his personality is going to get him into trouble. Dude, you are not... I mean, I'm not saying you can't train and go out there and put on a decent match, but where on earth do you get the idea that you are an ultimate
world-class mixed martial artist?
Where does Dana White, you know, does this, signs him because it's going to be good for views, but Punk is going to get himself killed out here, and this is what really bothered me about it. So Punk makes a lot of good points on the podcast about, you know, they rush you back to the ring, but you got to have time to heal up from your injuries. And I don't want to, you know, be broken by the time I'm like 40 or 50. And then he goes and he signs up for the UFC with no training.
Okay, well, there's a lot of things to talk about here. First off, at least in mixed martial arts, you only fight usually at most 4 times a year.
Yeah.
So the wear and tear, at least on paper, is a lot less than
on
wrestling.
On paper?
Yeah, it is. Here's the problem, though. It's not like CM Punk...
No, I just mean it is hypocritical.
This is what's hypocritical. What's hypocritical is him getting... He'll be main eventing his first pay-per-view with a 0-0 record. He has no right to do that. No. You think he has no... People get on me for saying he has no right to write a Thor comic. He has no right to take another... someone else's spot. There's guys that are fighting in cage matches out in Iowa for years in front of 300 people that would wish they got even the opportunity to do this.
Right, and now he's doing the exact thing that he bitched about the WWE
bringing
did,
back part
which is bringing back part timers,
main eventing. Yeah,
right, and now he's getting the shot to do that.
I will disagree with you. I don't think he's going to get killed because Dana even said this isn't like bringing in Brock Lesnar, who Lesnar had world class collegiate amateur wrestling experience. He had fought, remember, Brock Lesnar's first fight was not in UFC. He did one or two elsewhere in mixed martial arts before Dana White got in there. Plus, the heavyweight division in the UFC when Lesnar came was so thin that it wasn't the biggest danger. If he's fighting, I believe he'd be fighting in the 185 division. That's the most like stacked division. So even Dana said, we're not going to be fighting him against number one contenders or contenders. He'll be fighting other guys that are 1-0 or 1-1 or 0-0. That said, that's fine. But Dana White's always also said he doesn't want UFC to be a circus act. But now it's a circus act. Because even if the wear and tear, it's weird because CM Punk said like the wear and tear of my body from pro wrestling, I had to step away from it. He's been wrestling professionally, CM Punk, for 20 years. He started like in his mid-teens, I believe, like 15 or 16. Yeah. I can't imagine the wear and tear in his body. To go from that to try to train mixed martial artists, you have to understand, this isn't a hobby for them.
Yeah.
They train this like 4 to 5 hours a day.
Every day.
Six days a week, yeah. Let's just say. It's their life. It's your absolute life. It's tough. It's not. I'm not saying professional wrestling is. Professional wrestling is totally different because obviously, professional wrestling you're performing almost every night.
Yeah.
You're not getting punched in the face directly. You're not. You don't have to worry about getting knocked out. Well, you can get knocked out by accident, but you know what I mean. It's a different beast entirely. But now Punk has had jiu-jitsu training. He's trained with one of the Gracies. He's done, I think he's done training in Muay Thai. That's fine. But mixed martial arts, especially UFC level, is not for hobbyists.
Yeah.
You can get hurt, which is why, again, they're not going to be putting in, they're not going to put someone in the ring with Punk that he's going to get killed, because then no one wins. It'd be like Kimbo Slice all over again. They hired Kimbo Slice, who was a street brawler, yeah, who was a terrible mixed martial artist.
Yeah.
Put on terrible matches and then gets knocked out easily. But at least with Kimbo Slice, he went on the Ultimate Fighter show and earned his spot, at least, to train and show that he could do it. I have no qualms about it. I think CM Punk's going to try his hardest. That's the type of person he is. He doesn't want to disrespect everyone else in the ring. But again, if you're a mixed martial artist, you're fighting in one of these other smaller leagues, and maybe Dana White's rejected you and say you're a world-class athlete, you're like, why? Where's my shot? Who's this guy to get all this money and get this shot? So that's where Punk's been hypocritical. And he's like, yeah, he even says, like, well, he said, I know why fighters will be pissed at me, but be pissed at Dana, not me. So there's that to be said, too.
I don't know. I think he's a jerk.
Okay, then.
Anyways, it's time for some Q&A.
Q&A on the CU podcast. We're gonna skip talking about... what did we skip?
We're skipping another fucking trailer because I didn't see it.
Well, Deadpool is officially going to start shooting in March at Ryan Reynolds. That's cool news. That's all.
Yeah. Okay, so everyone knows that now.
and Mad Max Fury Road trailer. We'll talk about Mad Max later. That was a really awesome trailer.
All right. From Helen. Hi, Helen. Helen J. Spence. Pat, are there going to be surprises for the Punk in the new year, or anything new that you would like to try with your videos?
Well, let's see. Well, there's been a new DVD coming out next year. That's Punkish. I have probably a writing project that I'll be finishing next year. I'll be working on with other people, with a smirk. And then, yeah, you don't want to... It always comes to my mind where people give up their sort of series. Nostalgia Critic, Doug Walker, gave up doing Nostalgia Critic for a while, was done with it. If there's an audience, or if creatively I want to keep doing it, it's going to be 7 years of me doing Pat the Anus Point videos come June of next year. That's a long time.
Yes, it is.
That's longer than most TV shows.
And we're talking the UFC.
Join the UFC?
Yeah.
I was going to join the Throwdown gym when I first moved here, but I would get myself killed. Anyway, as long as I have good ideas that I think are good, I'm going to keep doing it. For me, doing video game reviews is not challenging. Actually writing the game review of, I'm going to review Guardian Legend. The challenge to me is to find it creatively interesting with stories. That's just how I am. I've always been a short story writer. So what I'm sort of gravitating towards, if you saw it in my Toki video, you'll see it in my Christmas video, definitely in the video I have planned for January, I'm going to be commenting more on things going on maybe in the YouTube community or gaming world. Almost, not want to say it's going to be like South Park-ish, but I want to say something a little bit more besides here's a zany story. That might be the direction I'm going to be going in the future as much as I can. And this is from at Crazy John T. What were your thoughts on the Game Genie when it first came out, and how do you feel about it now?
I remember my next-door neighbor got a Game Genie. He was a kid a few years younger than me, about my brother's age. And it's weird. I even at a young age, I was split on the Game Genie. Games that I had for a long time, I like to use the Game Genie on to access levels that I could never reach or do, like, those weird codes, like, you know, all the cars are backwards or, you know, Mario's jumps are, like, 500 feet in the air.
Sure.
But, you know, I saw so few games, you know, you got games so infrequently that I never wanted to break, like, a rental or break, you know, a new game I had gotten open with the Game Genie because I wanted to try and get to those areas myself. Now they're fun. I mean, they're handy for, you know, jumping around and stuff like that, but you can do all that sort of stuff in emulators. I don't know. As a kid, they were neat, but I never owned one. I just borrowed one constantly. I never felt it was essential.
I knew about two of my friends that had one. I always looked at it as like an illicit drug. It always didn't feel right to me.
Yeah.
To hack into these pieces of art. You know, it just didn't, it felt weird. I never had the inclination, oh, I want to see a glitched out Super Mario Bros. I just didn't want to do it. Not saying it's wrong, but it just felt weird as, like, you know, an 8-year-old, 9-year-old, 10-year-old just doing that. And now I never really had an inclination to do it. I just never did.
Yeah.
Maybe because I didn't like ever cheating in video games. I just didn't feel like, oh, infinite lives. Like, that's cool, but I don't want to.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I never did either just because I wanted the game to last longer. But like I said, I did like the hackier codes that you yourself said you did. And I did like the ones that gave Mario, like, moon jumps and stuff like that.
I guess, I don't know. I was never drawn to it. I always thought maybe I was too much a Nintendo fanboy. It was unlicensed. It was like, oh, you shouldn't be using it.
All right. This is from Real Jeff Unstick.
Real Jeff. I think it's Funstick.
Real Jeff Funstick. Do you think DLC has replaced unlocking content in games because we don't have the time to do it anymore?
No, DLC is just another form of revenue for companies. They don't give a shit about your playing experience. They think they see the money.
I don't think it's because we don't have time to do it anymore. I think it's a money thing. Now, it is interesting that you bring up the time because there are games with tons and tons of unlockables that will offer, I think a lot of them are EA games, but I think Ubisoft games do it too, that will offer you a bit of DLC. It's usually like $2, and it'll unlock everything there is to unlock in the game. Just boom, done. You can still play through the story mode, but all the unlocks, all your cars, all your wrestlers, all your fighters, whatever the hell it is, they're all unlocked so you don't have to go through all this shit that you can't do. Now, that's totally a personal thing. Is your time worth the $2 or not? I'm not going to make that judgment call. However, the DLC that, like, adds costumes to Street Fighter, that's just pure money-making revenue. You know, I miss unlocking things like costumes and alternate outfits in games. Unlocking secret levels or unlocking weird stuff like that. And, yeah, it's not because the company's benevolent to us. It's because they want more cash.
Yeah, I think when they're designing games now, especially for, like, we wrote up Capcom and, like, doing these cheap, you know, palette color swaps for $199. When they make these games, they now see, it's not like, oh, this is bonus money. They see this, okay, how much money when we design this game can we make from DLC? How much more percentage can we make?
Yeah, and that's the unfortunate thing. Especially a company like Capcom who's hurting for money, I don't think Capcom is, you know, if you're smart, let's say you're working at a job and there's a possibility you might get a bonus at the end of the month. If you're smart, you don't budget that bonus into your money. The money that you make per month. I think Capcom budgets DLC. I think they count on those DLC downloads. They need that money. And I think they structure their games in a way that they're going to get that money. And that's, I don't know, that's what a poor dying company does, I guess. From Jeron Kazan. Hello, Jeron. Older video game commercials had a bit more charm than today's. What do you think happened?
What I think happened is that video games started to be, they started to be designed, developed, and marketed as cinematic experiences versus being sold on the gameplay. So now you see all these commercials where they look like movies, they're presented like movies, and the gameplay is secondary, if non-existent. When you watch like these, now you watch all over football. If you told me like 6-7 years ago that you'd see video game commercials splashed over football and primetime shows, I would have said you were crazy. But now it's commonplace,
right?
But they're presented like movie trailers. I don't think they know how to. I don't think they either know or don't care. Or don't think it's effective to market video games as games anymore. I think they see that the way we market it is as a movie trailer. That's how it works.
Right.
That's how it started. I think it started more in movie theaters first. Before you see a movie, you see trailers for games, and then now you see the commercials.
I would I agree mostly with Pat. I think it's.
Well, thank you, Ian.
I think you're welcome. It happens once in a while. I mean, as when we were younger, you also have to remember that games are targeted to a younger demographic. They were thought of as toys, whether they're electronic or not. They're part of a system, so they were a little bit sillier, but they definitely focused on gameplay because that's what kids wanted to see. As the systems got more powerful, they could do these cinematic things. And I actually can kind of, if I had to point my finger at one commercial that changed how video game commercials were done, it would be the Final Fantasy VII commercial, which showed very, very little gameplay. It did show gameplay, but it showed very little gameplay because it wanted to show off the wow, whiz-bang new CG cutscenes that were in the game. And then after that, you started to see a lot of that. Now I think they'd show all the cinematic stuff because they want to get across story, because everyone knows what a brown first-person shooter looks like.
Everyone knows what a space shooter looks like, right, at this point. Halo or...
Yeah, Mass I mean, Effect. And why everyone knows what a sports game looks like. Why would they waste precious advertising seconds showing you what you already know?
Which is a shame, which basically tells you then all these games now are playing exactly the same.
Right.
So it's the window dressing is how we can sell these huge titles.
Yeah, I'm not saying that's a good thing. I'm saying...
We can't sell this first-person shooter anymore on its own. We sell it because it has Kevin Spacey in it.
Right.
Basically. Which is unfortunate.
Henry Delgadillo. Delgadio. What are your thoughts on resellers buying all the good stuff early at game conventions before it opens to the public?
I've seen this happen firsthand. I've seen it happen to me. It's like anything else. People want to say it's capitalism. Sure. I think it's shitty.
Yeah, it is shitty.
It's very shitty. Now, obviously, sellers do it to protect their own prices. One of the ways it happened to me once was it was in Portland, and one of the bigger sellers that was there, I'm not going to say their name, but I do remember them, bought a couple of the marquee titles at Extras of. I think I had let's just say a Mario Kart. Say I had the Mario Kart for probably like $15 to $20.
Yeah.
Let's just say. And then you go to their booth, they have it for $45. And it was my copy. And I recognized the guy that bought it right before it opened.
Right.
And it was like, okay, I see what you're doing. If you're at least honest about it, or maybe like what some guys will do is they'll say, listen, if you sell me what you have, maybe at the end of the last day, give me a good deal on it. If you don't want to get, that's fine. People have said it to me. Yeah. I think I had some extra boxed NES games I've had over the years. I had like 8 to 10 doubles, and it was like, I think it was SGC. One seller bought it all like the last day. He said he gave me a deal on it, or it was Retropalooza. It was one of them. That's fine. I have no problem with that. But I think it's really bad because a lot of these people are going. They're traveling on planes and they're spending a lot of money on tickets and hotel. And at least I understand that a lot of these conventions, I'm not paying for table space. Well, I'm paying in terms of I'm going there. I'm doing panels and things like that. But I'd like to give some sort of savings back to the people that show up, versus having them get charged double that's elsewhere, and that opportunity is taken away from them. And it's shitty, because it'd be nice for them to get a deal.
Sure.
Versus, I wouldn't want to go personally, when I go out to these places, I don't want to pay eBay prices, obviously. I'm traveling to these places. I don't get up at 7 a.m. or 6 a.m. to go to swap me to pay eBay prices. What's the point? I can just buy on eBay.
Yeah.
So it's not just shitty because of that. They're taking away a nice experience that they could be getting on top of that. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that. I mean, what else can you do or say?
I mean... I just think it's crappy because it's a smaller, when it's at a convention, it's a smaller community, and a lot of them are there to see what they can pick up. I feel like everyone should kind of have access to it at the same time. And obviously, it's really hard to police that. It's like at Comic-Con, you're not supposed to sell anything until the floor is open, but, people from other booths will go around, and that's fine, but we're not buying limited stuff, and we're also not buying stuff and then reselling it. We're simply just getting our piece of the pie before, you know, before you have to start working. But to actually scoop it up off of someone else and then resell that copy. And this is, you know, people bitch all the time about, well, if, you know, I've had people say it to me in the store. You know, well, I'm like, well, this is what the game's going for. I wish it was going for cheaper. I'm sorry. Well, if you wish it was going for cheaper, why don't you sell it for cheaper? Well, because of what you just said, Pat. If you price your stuff too low in any situation, like a convention or a flea market, or even a retail store that where and there's other retail stores in San Diego, you sell something for $20 that's currently going on average for $40 on eBay, someone's going to buy it and make a $20 profit off of it.
Sure.
You know, I mean,
you have to walk this weird line.
Yeah, it's
and I found that out myself firsthand.
Yeah, and it sucks to walk that weird line, but no one, I feel like people just don't take that into account, and that's a very important thing to remember when you're buying stuff. Good people will try to give you a good deal, but they're also trying to watch their back and make sure that they still. And now I'm going outside of conventions, but trying to make sure they still have a business to run.
Sure, and I hate to say it, but the people that have been the most nefarious with me. And me selling my extras at conventions have been people that had booths down the way. I remember one. I usually don't get pissed, but there was one time where I just about did, because I think it was when I had a bunch of manuals, and I don't know the prices of manuals. That's one thing. NES games, I don't keep up with the prices of manuals.
Right.
So I had an extra Mega Man 1, which I know goes for a little bit of money, at least like $20 at least, because that's a hard to find one.
At least.
So stuff like that, I had an extra Mega Man 1. I had some other ones, I believe, that were in there. And so I said, okay, I will give you, I think I said to him something to the effect of, all right, I'll count them all up. I'll give you like 20% off, you know, 15-20% off of, you know, the eBay average sold price. They win, I win, you know. And then, so I counted up. I said, okay, this is what you get off this money. And then there was two guys there, and one of them, the guy said, you said 30%. And I said, no, I never said that. And even the person next to me said, no. So this motherfucker was trying to somehow trick me or shame me or something to get more of a deal off when I know he was just going to resell them anyway. It was like, I know there's no honor amongst thieves, but it's like, why would you... Like, I don't understand, like, you think that's going to work with me? Like, it was really... There's bad people in every sort of walk of a life.
Mm-hmm.
But that, to me, is the worst type of person.
Oh, yeah.
That, to me, is the very worst. You're not just... You're being slimy and dishonest on top of what's already going on. It's like, come on, man. Don't fuck it. Don't do that.
Skipping this next one because I don't know what it's about.
Now. Okay, real quick. At Brian Beekert... What is your opinion on the public reaction to Lucky Clove, the Tekken 7 teaser? Absolutely ridiculous. So if you want to Google it real quick, Lucky Clove as a character has been revealed.
That's Chloe.
Chloe? Sure. Now you're gonna admonish me on that when you don't know what we're talking about. So Lucky Clove is a character that is basically, I guess, she has a schoolgirl outfit on, she has, like, knee pads, and she has, like, a furry, like... kitten arm sweatshirt with ears and headphones. She looks absolutely ridiculous, and I guess there are fans that are up in arms over her being a Tekken 7 character. Okay?
There's robots in Tekken.
There's robots in Tekken.
There's pandas.
There's tiny dinosaurs that fart. There are, you know what I mean? There's wood people in Tekken. I like the Tekken franchise a lot. But Tekken is known for having the most ridiculous characters in the game. Why are people getting upset about Lucky Clove? I don't know. The Tekken game director, Katsuhiro Harada, responded to the fan outrage, saying that... I don't know if this was a joke. People were saying he fucks with fans.
He fucks with fans ruthlessly.
So he basically kind of said, this isn't for you. She's not going to appear for Western audiences. It's only going to be in Europe and Japan.
And then he said that they were going to give us an MMA skinhead type fighter. Okay, great, fine.
Which is funny as hell.
It is.
To say that.
Whatever. At Jody Anthony, thoughts on YouTube game personalities destroying cartridges in their videos generally done for comedy?
Well, we know how that started. It started with James. He sort of set the precedent. No one was doing it before James... hitting stuff with a hammer, and other YouTubers are followed. At this point, can we say at this point that it's been done to death? It's been done to death. And it bothers me that people destroy games and videos. It just bothers me. I elbow dropped one once and then bit it, but that was about it.
And last but not least,
that was the shortest one ever.
Because it's 11:30. Sean, at Game Mana, my good buddy Sean. Is the abundance of mobile gaming going to cause the next generation of men to pee sitting down? I've actually learned to play simple iPhone games while peeing standing up, so...
I really hope you drop your phone into
I'm okay.
a bowl of piss.
I'm totally all right.
You're okay with that?
Yeah,
I'll tell you what this has done, though. You know, you used to have, like, books.
Yeah.
Or even magazines you'd read for the bathroom. I'm illiterate now. You know, yeah. I haven't read since 2011. Because it's all now just going on your phone, not just games and playing Zynga Poker and checking Twitter. It's all that. Instead of just reading a nice Robert Ludlum thriller or reading Ray Bradbury, I don't do it anymore.
I don't take anything into the bathroom with me anymore. I did, because it's not just books, it's games that do it too. When Smash came out on the 3DS, I found myself taking 45-minute shits. And it's not because I'm... it wasn't for lack of fiber. It was just like, I was in the zone and like I was like, oh, I'm done.
I have company over.
I should probably get up.
All right.
For Patrick Contry, this is Ian Ferguson saying good night.
This may be our final podcast of the year. We're not sure yet. I have a lot of stuff. I got to get a DVD done in a month out to the, you know, the presser, so to speak, the producer. And we're not sure how our schedules will be coming, you know, eking out the rest of the year. So we'll try to get a Christmas special in. So for Ian Contry, he attempted to sign off. I'll be Pat
Ian,
Contry.
You just called me Ian Contry.
I'm so tired. We got to do these earlier.
No. Well, then we start at like 8:30 or just have it...
We do it on Tuesdays.
That's not happening. Can't happen.
We stop the podcast. We'll see you later, everyone. Have a good one.
Podcast is over. Good night.
It's done.